Session number 26359.
Colonel Robbins, Reel 5. So, a little rest for the men anyway. And then you were taken forward, were you?
And then we started what was called the breakout. And for the first time, we were able to get on vehicles and advance. And we came out of Normandy, and we were told that we were going to advance about 20 kilometres towards the highest point in Normandy, which was a place called Mount Pinson. And this, again, once you got to the top of Mount Pinson, you had a view way back to the River Seine, way forward to the channel, and it was about 1,200 metres in height. Rather different from Hill 112, 112 metres. So that is what we were aiming at. And the 43rd Division and other divisions were each given their line of advance. When you're advancing like this, you're not very aware of what's you're told what's on your right and left. We had, I think, a Scottish, the 15th Scottish on our left, and another division on our right, and the 7th Armoured Division was somewhere. And our armour was there, but we went forward with the 13th, 18th Hussars, who were our supporting tanks. And I was in the 4th Wiltshires in commanding C Company, and I was the leading company of this advance. A squadron of tanks was in the front, and on these tanks were seated infantry, because we did not have enough vehicles for everything. And also, if they were seated on the tanks and we were attacked, we could get off quickly and fight. It is uncomfortable on a tank, hot. You've got to hold on. If you sleep, doze off, if you can doze off on a tank, you can fall off. And the next tank will run you over. So it wasn't pleasant. I was in my jeep, which is an open vehicle, with my driver, myself, signaller behind, and in front of these people. We advanced for quite a while, and we found no enemy to speak of. And when I say quite a while, I mean maybe 4 or 5 hours. We then halted for the night and had a rest and a food, and we started off at dawn next day, going south all the way. And somebody reported back that Tiger tanks had been seen on a hill about 2 or 3,000 yards to our right. This made the squadron of tanks stop, slow up, and they knew perfectly well what a Tiger tank with its 88 millimeter could do to them from 2,000 yards. And they, for some reason, stopped and withdrew into cover. This did not please my commanding officer, who said, "You must get on." There was some discussion, and they said, "Well, we better just see, find out what it is." He turned to me and said, "You will go on." I said, "Very good, sir." So my infantry were therefore put into whatever vehicles we could get, and we went on, leaving the tanks where they were, and the rest of the infantry came on. We went on for about 3 or 4 miles, and we were coming to the foot of Mount Pinson. There was a river, a small stream at the bottom, a bridge. The bridge was blown. Therefore, I couldn't get across except by foot, and I still was told to press on, as was another rifle company with me. We let our pioneers get on with trying to mend the bridge. We crossed the stream, got across, and slowly went up in rising ground, thick undergrowth, trees, to the first objective, which was a village called Saint Jean le Blanc. As we approached, so the Germans opened fire on us, and we went to ground. We then had a long day of fighting slowly forward till we could get into this farmyard come village.
Where were the German positions? Do you know where their machine guns
were? Yes, their German machine guns were at the top of this hill, well sighted in the village of Saint Jean le Blanc.
Right.
Which was, as you look at Mount Pinsot, on the east and south. And we, for some reason, had been told to try and get to Mount Pinsot with a sort of right hook. Mm-hmm. And this is what we were trying to do. We found a track leading up to this village, and we went up there, but were stopped by a machine gun at the top. I pushed someone round to the right and someone to the left. And it was slow work, but we gradually worked our way into this village, where which the Germans were holding in some strength. One of my platoon commanders rushed forward to a building and was shot and lay in the doorway of a barn. I said to someone, get him out. They did. They were shot. We couldn't reach him. It was covered. He was in such agony, this poor boy. I hate to say it, but he put his own weapon into his stomach and finished himself off. It's a terrible thing to see. On the right, that platoon commander was written off, as was the sergeant, and a young lance corporal took command of what was left. And I remember seeing him charging round one bit, and he came face to face with the German SS officer doing the same. It was a quick fight, close quarters. And this sort of close quarter fighting was going on in this village. And it was now 6 o'clock in the evening. We hadn't fed. Still the tanks hadn't got up to us. Night was about. But eventually a tank did somehow get up about 6 o'clock. And with its help we advanced into the middle of the village and with its guns finished off the rest of the buildings, and they surrendered all. No one surrendered. They were all killed or withdrew.
Were they occupying many buildings in the village? They were
eight or ten. It was a big farm.
Yes.
And my company C was on this side, and A company was on that side, having a similar battle. Two leading companies.
Any sign of any French civilians about there?
Yes, there were some French civilians somewhere there, who appeared when we had won. And they had been hiding in the cellars and so on. I went forward with my FOO, forward observation, a very gallant young British gunner officer. And I told the men to dig themselves in, protect themselves. I was sure the Germans would attack, counterattack. And I went forward of this village with this young gunner, to see if he could find any targets and see if we could find a good OP. It was quite close in that farm. As we went forward, there were no Germans. They'd withdrawn. But we came onto a hedge, and rounding the hedge, we bumped into two German soldiers, armed. I was the infantry officer, and I should have had my weapon ready and shot them. But I did not have my weapon ready, and they could easily have shot me. Had this young British officer not pulled his Schmeisser, he captured a German. A lot of us took German weapons because they were better than ours. And he killed both these men. No, killed one and wounded the other, who ran down it. And we looked down the hill, and there was indeed this counterattack forming up. We'd met no tanks in the village. There were tanks down there and infantry. So this boy was on his radio, which he had with him, and was able within minutes to call down fire on what he had seen. It was a very, very good example of the training he had had and the quick action of our gunners. Well, I don't know what we withdrew ourselves pretty quickly because we were getting too close for comfort. Went back to the village. We had buried under flimsy graves, really, because it was very hard earth, what we had of our own. It must have had several, 10, 15 killed. And wounded. But we took up our position. Still no food at all had reached us. And we just had our biscuits and whatever we had, chocolate, whatever we had in our pocket. Night fell. And then the general decided that where we were was the wrong way to go and we would have to withdraw. We were given orders to withdraw at midnight. And a night withdrawal, in fact, at any time, is the most difficult operation of war. Because what happens is that the forward troops, the rear troops are drawn out, and there's a checkpoint, and the officer commanding must be the last man out in a withdrawal. So we waited, and we knew the Germans were coming up. There were signs of them coming up. But I laid on the orders to withdraw, as did my other company commander on the right. And the checkpoints were established, and slowly, quietly, the men went out. Each platoon, sergeants, officers. And as they went past the checkpoint, there was our young gunner with his carrier. They were such splendid, we were such close friends, the gunners and ourselves. He gave each man a biscuit with a bit of bully beef on it, because he hadn't eaten for 2 days. And a quick swig of water from a water bottle. Each man had that. Kept them going. And eventually I came out last. And the Germans were definitely in the village by that time. It was really rather nasty. And it meant going down this slope again to the river and across. When I got to the other side, the mortar platoon commander came to me, Captain Powell, and he said, I'd like my two mortar sergeants back, please. I said to Sergeant Major, he did give him his... To our horror, we discovered these two men who had been in a trench in my headquarters, asleep, someone had forgotten to tell them we were withdrawing. And they were left there in that village into which the Germans were now seeping and from which we had withdrawn. And we were now 2 miles out. This Captain Pearl got on his motorcycle. He knew exactly where I had been because he had visited me during the day. He rode back in the night, right up there, parked his motorcycle at the bottom of the hill, crept up to where he knew my company headquarters had been, went to the very area where he had visited his sergeants. They were both there and asleep. Germans in the village. He gently shook them and led them quietly down to where his motorcycle was, 300 yards away, put them both on the motorcycle, kick-started it, and came out safely with these two men. I put him in for an award. He never got it, but that was an act of great bravery. He knew the Germans were there, and of course the Germans were there. And that was that. We withdrew.
Yeah. And his name, for the record?
Captain Powell. Mm.
Mm. Do you know anything else about him?
Well, he was just a fine officer. He's a territorial. He was an auctioneer from Chippenham. And he lives to this day. I think he's 90 years old or something now. He's very frail. Mm. Very great man, very great friend.
Yeah.
Countryman. Mm. Brave. Mm. So, the orders were that we would withdraw from this area, Saint-Jean-le-Blanc, and go round and attack from the other side. The 5th Wiltshires were in the middle, and they were going to attack up from the middle. We were to withdraw behind them and get round on their left, and we were to attack Montpensier the next day. It was now dawn. We had not eaten, but we were withdrawn to an area 3 or 4 miles away, at the foot of the hill again still, where the brigade major told us to go. And there breakfast was awaiting us, which we were really looking forward to. Dawn, eggs and bacon and tea. And dawn was just coming up, and suddenly, to our amazement, a salvo of German guns came down on us. We had been put in the most extraordinarily stupid place, right at the foot of another village, in which were German OPs, observation points. They'd seen us all formed up and the cooks cooking things, waited till the right moment, and then let us have it. The Dixies and the tea and the cooks were all blown up. Several men of another company were killed, and officers, and we hurriedly had to withdraw. No breakfast, no cooks, and we got under cover and went on our way, and cursing the staff officer who had found this place off the map and put us there. Sort of thing that happens. Meanwhile, the 5th Wiltshires were attacking a special crossroads, La Varinière, which we found out later was a key point of the whole battle. And the Germans were holding them up, and the 5th Wiltshires were fighting very hard, suffering casualties. We continued on our way past them to the other side, where we were meant to be to attack on their left flank. And waited all day. It was hot. Again, no food or anything. But this was all part of the training coming out. One could do it. The 5th Wiltshires then conducted one of their best battles, in which they fought for this crossroads, but they had to cross a stream and a bridge to get to it. They were held up. One company was got round, but they went in the dark, but they were surrounded by Germans, most of them killed, and what few could get away, got away. One of them was Mickey Thomas, this man who I played rugby with. He was fly half, I was scrum half. He's the one I met in India. It was his sister who married the Duke of Somerset and is still alive. And he was shot dead. Lovely man. The colonel of the 5th Wiltshires went forward to see why the men were being held up. And there they were, lying in the bottom of a muddy ditch. Germans covering them and shooting. The bridge held. The colonel walked forward, I remember, with his swinging his ash plant walking stick. He stuck a rose in his helmet. It was Minden Day. And he said to his adjutant as he left, he said, "I'm very frightened, but I must go and see what's happening." He walked down to the bridge and he shouted to these men, "We have got to get on. A German put a bullet through his heart from a tree about 30 yards across. The man with the colonel saw where that came from and shot the sniper dead. The colonel fell dead. The men saw him. His effort made them surge forward, and that's the sort of thing that happens. One man's effort made them take that extra effort and get out of this ditch, go on up the hill, attack. And they did. But the colonel was dead. The padre had been shot dead. Signal officer dead. The battalion headquarters was practically written off except for this adjutant. He went on commanding the battalion, pushing the forward. Company commanders were being riddled off, and slowly they got to this crossroad where a big battle took place. And they held it, but they were decimated. This awful fighting had resulted in so many of them being laid out. There was now one major left, one captain, the adjutant, a couple of subalterns, and 80 men out of 600. My battalion, the 4th Wiltshires, was told to go through and get the top of the hill. It's no good them doing any more. There are only 80 left. We went through them, and that is when I saw my friend Mickey Thomas lying dead on the side of the road. I couldn't stop. I did stop. He was riddled with machine gun bullets. And I just went on. And night was falling. Somehow we got to the top of this Mount Pansor with very little opposition. Much of it had been rubbed out by the 5th Wiltshires. And some of it had retired to the very top of the hill to hold that. We got to the top. Meanwhile, a troop of our tanks had somehow found a way up, and they'd got to the top. And the top of Mount Pansor was taken in this extraordinary way, with no fighting on the top, all the fighting at the bottom, with so many people killed, and the Germans had withdrawn to the top and just the other side. I got to the top with my men and dug in there, and we were absolutely exhausted. It was very hard. Earth. We could hardly dig in, but we did dig in. We could hear the Germans, perhaps 50 yards away, the other side of the hill, digging in. But we were too exhausted to do anything and went to sleep. Dawn came, and I said to Sergeant Major, who was in my trench, "Get those two signalers going in the trench next to us and get on to battalion headquarters and find out what's going on." He went over to there. He came back. He said, they're not there. Their sets are there, but they're not there, sir. What had happened was that the German patrol had got in that night from 50 yards away, crept into my positions. They chose to go to that trench and not to this one, and they'd taken those two signalers away. They must have killed them on the other side and got rid of them, because we never found them again. They were not on any prisoner of war list as prisoners, which you know, you expected to find. And they were not found dead anywhere. They just vanished into thin air.
Did you ever find out what happened?
Never found out what happened. When we captured some Germans, we asked them if they'd captured anyone from the hill. They expressed no knowledge. But they had been taken by Germans and vanished.
You don't think they could have deserted?
If they deserted, they never returned to England, and they never went to Germany.
Yeah.
They vanished into thin air.
Yeah.
And I think they had their throats cut and were just thrown somewhere. But we never found them.
Yeah.
So that was the top of Mount Pinsent, which the Wiltshires and the 13th, 18th had, and that opened the way for a great advance.
I just wanted to ask you, what rank were you by this time?
All this time I was a major commanding a company.
Yes, right, thank you.
Company commander, the
so
Hood.
You were a major when you... You were made up after you went to France?
I went to France as a captain, as you know, from the Octeau.
Yes.
And I was promoted major, at the end of Normandy.
Right.
I was a major, yes, 20th of July, something like that.
Right, okay.
And from then I went on commanding a company.
Right. And when did you get your MC?
That was near Arnhem.
Right, okay, yes. I know people tend to modestly leave things like that out, and we really would like to know. So, okay.
You know, I was put in for a mention in dispatches, I remember the adjutant told me, for doing that car PK fighting patrol, but never got it. Again, you see, another award went up after this battle. You never heard another thing.
Mm.
These things get lost. And what I found out, as I was saying to one of my soldiers the other day, when I was talking about a Victoria Cross that was won by one of our sergeants at Anzio, I said, I've seen so many of you do such good things. You deserve to be awarded. Nothing happened and nothing came of it. And that goes on throughout warfare. Men do things, brave things, sacrificing their life. They do maybe unthinkingly. No reward.
Colonel Robbins, end of reel 5.